You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada's, indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and the CEO of Mercedes-Benz Worldwide. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Carl. I'm delighted to be here.
Tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what did your family get up to?
So I grew up in Montreal. I grew up in NDG and, had a great childhood. What a wonderful city to grow up in. I left after high school, went to school in the States.
What took you down to the States for university?
Really serendipity. So, I was a good student. I made good grades. And there was a guidance counselor, and I think her name was Emma Barry. And I'm going back decades now. And one day she said to me, Susan, maybe you want to think about going down to the States. And I remember in the guidance office, they kept the college catalogs for the American universities and colleges like way in a closet in the back. But I took a look and I had, I think I have a sort of an entrepreneurial bent or a sense of adventure, and I like to do things that are, challenging. So I took a flyer and I applied. But it's one of those moments that really reminds me what an impact an individual can have on your life in terms of changing the trajectory as she had on mine. So I'm always mindful of that.
Where did you go to? Did you go to Seja?
No, I left after grade 11.
And what school were you going to for high school?
Oh, I went to West Hill High School in NDG.
Okay. So this is, a lot of people are still going there today, obviously. So to go down to Yale, that's something which would be unusual. And it took a fair bit of chutzpah, but you probably didn't understand what a big deal it was, I guess.
That's probably a fair comment. I think there were a handful of my classmates that went to different schools outside of Canada. And, I think when you're younger, you don't have a sense of barriers or constraints. And as I said, I like a bit of adventure. I like to be a little bit entrepreneurial. And, it was a question of, well, why not if I can get in and why not go and why not do the best you can? So it was fun. It was a great experience.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Did you fit in Yale as a Canadian right away, or was there a little bit of an adjustment period to being down in the Ivy League, down in the States? Or were you fairly good at it?
Well, I don't know if I was fairly good at it, but here's what I would say. I didn't feel there was an adjustment period. I think one of the great things about institutions like Yale, any big school that draws its student body from many different places, that is that it's very diverse. Everybody's coming and starting with at a level playing field. And it was an institution that worked very hard to make sure you had a place from the outset. So I never felt out of place and, made good friends that I still have to this day. It was a great challenging experience academically. But it opened up my eyes to so much. And no, I never had a moment of homesickness and I never had a moment of feeling out of place. And I'm a loyal alumna.
What did you study?
I was a history major.
Why history?
So I love stories and I love to understand things that have a big arc to them. And so when you study history, you learn to take a really big perspective on what's going on. So, at that time at Yale, you had to take 12 history courses to fulfill the major. So I took Chinese history and Greek history and Victorian England history and French modern history. You went on and on. And it was just fascinating to learn about the human condition and to really have the opportunity to reflect on what we as a society, as a species, how we make decisions, what decisions we make, and how that shapes the world we live in.
So the art students would be happy to hear you say that, because it sounds like in your job today, that sense of history is probably actually helpful at times.
I think a sense of history is always helpful. So I think history really, you know, there's the old adage, you know, history repeats itself, but there's an awful lot of truth in that. And so it gives you those guideposts and things to think about and to be mindful of. And as a researcher, those are things you, and you know that because you're a researcher too, Carl, you always want to build on the shoulders of others. You know, there's a downside to that too. You don't want to be constrained by history, but I think it helps you chart a clear path.
What was your first job after Yale?
So I graduated from Yale and I joined a bank, Chemical Bank, which is today, you know, many mergers and acquisitions later, JP Morgan Chase. And that was a very common thing back in the time. A lot of young folks coming out of U.S. schools would join banks and you would go through their training programs and you would learn how to lend money and be a lending officer. And I did that for about 5 years.
In where, what city?
I was stationed in New York twice and in Toronto twice. And it was you know, again, another pivotal experience because it exposed me to business and it gave me the fundamentals of finance.
Susan, what took you back to do your MBA after some years in finance?
Through my time as a banker, you know, I really got exposed to a lot of different businesses and a lot of different business situations. And, you know, I felt that I needed to understand more about how business fundamentally worked. So I understood how to do credit analysis and how to make a good loan, but I didn't really understand how a business made a payroll or how it made decisions about, you know, how much to invest in R&D or how, you know, what the best practices were for managing its workforce. So I had a desire to understand more. And so that led to the obvious decision, well, let's go get some grounding in that. And so, you know, the answer to that is like, go get an MBA. You have to be mindful, though, that an MBA, and I say this with all due respect to your students and you, is just giving you the mental map. You got to then take that knowledge, that mental map, that vocabulary, those concepts, and you got to go out and sort of road test them yourself and learn how to use them.
We're speaking today with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. After the business school, what was your next career move after that?
You know, I've had a bit of an eclectic career. So I came out of business school and I did what sort of 50% of my class at Harvard Business School did. I became a management consultant and I did that for a while. And then I missed the transactional nature of banking. I missed the adrenaline rush you get from doing deals and from being in a very frontline action-oriented environment. So I went back to banking, but that I went to the investment banking side of the street, if you will, and I did that for a while. But then I really decided what I was really wanting to do and to understand. I wanted to understand people and change management more because I had many observations around how organizations work and how they try and sustain themselves and change. And I like to understand things deeply. So I went back and did a PhD. That's sort of the 10 years after business school. That's how it played out.
So a PhD, it must have been quite a reaction at the iBank when you said, I'm going to go to do a PhD.
Then I got a little gap in between when I was back doing consulting, but it is an unusual career path. So I always, you know, when I go and I speak to groups of students or women's groups, I always say, you know, here's my career, but don't follow it because it's a very unusual path, but it served me well. You know, I do think all the things I've done throughout my career up until now have really given me the building blocks to be a good leader, hopefully a very good leader in the organization I'm leading now.
What was your PhD thesis on? Can you give us the elevator version? I shouldn't ask a former doctoral student, but what's the elevator version?
So, you know, I think I have it on the shelf beside me here. Oh my goodness. Yes. If I squint, I can see the title. You know, my PhD is in organizational studies. So again, I am always interested in how organizations manage themselves. And I'm interested in particular in how and why they change. What drives that? Because I have an overarching desire to see things always continually get better. So my doctorate was on how organizations manage the regulatory environment. And so I did case studies on how the Canadian banking sector interacted with parliamentarians when it comes to setting their regulatory strategy. So regulation, but really more about organizational dynamics.
We're speaking today with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. This is entirely self-serving as an academic, but why didn't you become a professor? Why did you decide to go and be a leader instead?
No, I get asked that question. So first, let me say, never an easy decision, right? If you really, you love to dive deep into problems and research questions, you know, being an academic is a very seductive path. And I have, you know, I've taught at the university. I sat on the board of governors of York University for many years. At the conference board, one of our largest knowledge areas is education and skills. And we actually run a council for university executives. So I've had a lot of exposure to that. And I love the university. But for me, for my particular personality, and for the things I wanted to achieve in life, I felt I was better placed in a business environment where I could make things happen quickly that were very applied. I'm a very applied researcher by inclination as well as by training. So the I think I'll always stay close to the university sector, and I love teaching when I did, but I also love to make things happen in the practitioner world.
Why didn't you go do your PhD down in the States? Why did you stay in Toronto?
You know, it's interesting because I had 2 degrees by that stage. You know, I had a BA from Yale and an MBA from Harvard. And I certainly considered that, but, you know, family reasons, my family was here, we were rooted here. So, and we've got excellent universities here. So I ended up at York and I had the great privilege of working some world-class academics there.
So it's interesting that our fathers particularly probably had one job for life relatively. Us move around a couple times. Where the Generation Z, the idea of a job for life just horrifies them.
Yeah. And you know what, it horrifies for me too. I think I've had 10 jobs in my life. You know, we at the conference board, we are one of the consortia partners for the Future Skills Center, which is the huge government initiative that's been stood up to help the country upskill for the future of work. And one of the things the research is showing now is everybody needs to be a lifelong learner. Everybody needs to go out and figure out what their next career path is. And, you know, I think that's frankly a good thing. I think from, and, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, the nation's labor pool and talent force, that kind of flexibility, that kind of nimbleness, that kind of curiosity and ability to port your skills and your interests is very important. For me, it served me well in life. It keeps me fresh. And you learn with every one of those new jobs. And if you really do what Michael Sabia did, and I guess what I did, where you're going dramatic, you're making dramatic changes in terms of the type of organization or the type of sector, it makes you much more flexible. And I think it makes you're better equipped for the next role just by a definition because you've had to think more broadly.
We're speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Coming up, we'll discuss what her everyday looks like as leader of a not-for-profit think tank. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. It's interesting, Susan, that you've gone back and forth from, you know, NGOs to the real world. I remember Intact and Holt Renfrew. Holt Renfrew must have been quite a different atmosphere because it's one of the great luxury brands in Canada, indeed the world. Tell us a little bit about Holt Renfrew and your time and the culture there.
So I'm going to contrast it to Intact, which is also a great brand. So both of those organizations in Canada are the leaders in their industry. You know, Holt Renfrew is the biggest luxury retailer in the country. Intact is the largest PNC in the country. I would say what they both share, what was common across the cultures, is that desire to be excellent, to be the best in their field. But they are very different cultures when it comes to risk taking and when it comes to innovation. So property and casualty insurance, by definition, is all about risk and minimizing it. And it is necessarily a very disciplined approach and a very disciplined culture that way. Holt Renfrew is a very creative place with a lot of very, very creative people. But again, when I look through it from the point of view of the executive role I was filling, the chief human resources officer, they share the same kinds of challenges around their workforces. You know, how do you engage people better? How do you prepare them and create an environment where they can do their best work? How do you attract and keep the best talent? The issues and the challenges are the same. And often, you know, the same kinds of tools and processes serve them well. So they were both interesting cultures to be in, very different, but both really fun places.
Susan, how many years were you at Catalyst and what does Catalyst do?
Well, you'd have to ask Catalyst for what they do now, but I was a Catalyst. I worked with Catalyst prior to joining them formally, and I worked with them for about 4 years as a consultant on different projects. I opened the Canadian office in 2000, and we were the first office outside of their head office in New York. So it was really groundbreaking. And so I built it for 6 years, left it in very good shape, and they've had a series of wonderful leaders and have done some great work since then.
So why would you leave? You accomplished a lot, but why was it time to move on in your mind?
You know what? I had gone in and I had set myself some objectives in terms of how large I would take the organization and where I wanted to get it to. And I'd achieved those. And I felt ready for a bigger challenge. And so I thought, well, time to go look for that. And so I did. And what turned out to be the right move for me was it gave me the opportunity to move into an executive role in the private sector and to really experience what it was like to be in the C-suite and to make those, the hard decisions you have to make again around, who gets opportunities, where the resources go, and so on. So, if I look at my career pattern, it's always been a mixture of go do some work, which some people would pejoratively say in the real world. I happen to think academia is the real world too, but go do some work in the field on the applied side, come back, reflect, do some deeper research and thinking, go back again. So I've gone back and forth. And I think that's served me well in that I understand both perspectives. And I think I bring them to bear in both places in the work I did. So I think when I was in the private sector, I was a CHRO twice, Chief Human Resources Officer. I always brought a very deep evidence-based focus. We didn't make any policy changes or do any programs unless we could dig in and see what our data told us. And I think as a researcher, whether it's at Catalyst or whether it's now leading the conference board, we ensure that the questions we are asking and the work we're undertaking serves an applied audience so that people can actually use this, our insights, so those insights don't just sit on the shelf.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. How long have you been at the Conference Board now?
3 years.
What does the Conference Board do? I think all Canadians have heard about it, but we may not be entirely sure what it does.
Well, thank you for that question then, because I hope all Canadians have heard about it. So the Conference Board is the country's largest independent applied research organization by a long shot. And our work is focused primarily in the area of research. And so we produce research reports, research studies, research tools, many of which are available to the public. We do that research across 9 areas. So we work in economics, education and skills, health, inclusion and diversity. I am going to list them for you, Carl. Innovation and technology, immigration, and as I say that, sustainability, human resources, and Indigenous and Northern communities. So we go in and we do applied research, so primary research. We produce reports, we produce tools. So that's the bulk of our work. But another important aspect is we do convening. So we have 19 executive councils, and we bring leaders in Canada together around these councils to help them understand the information they need to become better leaders and make better decisions. Sometimes it's our research. Sometimes we bring others in to speak to them. So most of our areas have a council or two. So it's like the Council of HR executives, the Council of Chief Privacy Officers. So we're a convener and we are a researcher. And we've been at it for, I'm going to say 67, 68 years now. So I encourage everybody to look at the website. There's a lot of fantastic material there that's available to the general public that, again, is evidence-based in data.
We're speaking today with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. When were you first thinking I might be a leader? Was it back in high school or was it later on in life? Clearly you're a leader today, Susan, have been for many years. When did you say to yourself, I might be a leader?
So I'm not sure I ever said that because I think I probably for many years thought of a leader as someone who has achieved a senior level in the organization. And I actually don't think about leadership that way now. I think leadership is you can be a leader at any level of the organization. You can be a very effective and influential informal leader as well as a formal leader. So I think all along the way, I was always trying to improve things in an organization or, sort of gather people together and get them to, make some changes over here. I do think at one point in my career, I brought an organization called Catalyst to Canada, and I was their first president, and I sat on their executive in their head office in New York. And Catalyst is a nonprofit that does research into women's advancement. And that was my first formal leadership role where I had to make decisions around people, around business, around the direction we were going to take and so on. And one of the things that really struck me at the time is that part of being a leader means the obvious things like you have to have vision and set a strategy and so on, the things they teach you in business school. But at an even more fundamental level, you know, when you're a leader, you get to allocate the resources, you know, not only the financial resources, you allocate the opportunities, you determine the risks. And with that comes a lot of power. So as leaders, we have power, and you can have some power around that in any part of the, you know, any level of an organization. And that means you have the opportunity and frankly, the responsibility to influence the environment you're in. And so the flip side of that, that I came to realize over my years there is you also have the responsibility to use that power wisely and to make those decisions wisely because you are affecting others. I think one of the things that is a challenge or a problem even in our times is sometimes we have leaders who forget that fundamentally they're exercising power. And I think to be a good leader and a great leader, you have to do that in service of something other than yourself. You have to always be thinking, who and what am I in service of here? Whether it's your employees, your customers, a larger purpose. And I think, you know, much too often we see leaders who are there not in service of others, but they're there in service of their own agenda. So those are some of my reflections on leadership that I, you know, crystallized in that first formal leadership role.
Is it changing a bit? Are people becoming a little bit more servant leaders, or is that perhaps too optimistic of myself?
Well, that's a great question. I always go back to data and evidence. So I can't tell you whether I think that's actually changing a lot, but I do think we're in a period where people are reflecting on that more. And I think you see that in a couple of ways. So I think the whole movement towards a greater attention on ESG and those kinds of sustainability concerns, which have been around, frankly, for a couple of decades at a minimum now, but are now being taken much, much more seriously. So I think the shift from shareholder capitalism to stakeholder capitalism is causing people, even people who may have, you know, their own personal agenda at their fundamental core, to think more about who are we in service of now, you know, today's generation, the future. So I think that's a shift that's happening that may be causing individual leaders to think differently. The other thing that's causing people to think differently, frankly, has been some of what we've seen around the situation in the U.S. with former President Trump and the, you know, the sort of the rise of demagogues and the rise of right-wing populism, which I think is causing many people to think about what are we in service of here and what do we do? So I don't know if it's actually shifting, but I do think it's causing questions, and that's a good thing.
We're speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Up next, we'll talk about the future of work at the Conference Board of Canada. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Where are you located primarily?
So this is an interesting question. So the Conference Board actually, I'm told, started in Montreal 68 years ago with four economists, I guess, and some, this is lost to the sands of time, but moved to Ottawa. And so for the bulk of the time, up until last year, we were based in Ottawa, the majority of employees. So we have, you know, we have the odd person who is, you know, we have a couple of people in Calgary, we have a person in Montreal, but we were Ottawa based and very much that was part of who we were. When COVID came, we made a pivotal decision for ourselves, and we decided to go virtual. We decided until there is an effective treatment for the pandemic that given the nature of our business and who our stakeholders were, that we could be a virtual organization. And we were going to put our efforts into becoming the best virtual organization we could be. You know, we are knowledge-based. We don't serve the front line and we don't work in a factory or a hospital. So we can do this. So we are now a virtual organization. We are building. We owned an office building in Ottawa. It is up for sale. So we made the big decision. Interestingly, we, like many other organizations, when COVID hit, we put a hiring freeze in place till we could see how things shook out. We lifted that freeze last summer, and we've been hiring. And I will tell you, almost 2/3 of our hires are outside of Ottawa now, and they go coast to coast. And so we are truly a national organization, which from a talent standpoint is phenomenal. You know, it's a great, great plus. I do think at some point we will come back and become what is called a hybrid organization. So we'll bring people back together physically, but it'll be in a different way. Because I think one of the sea changes that we're going to see out of COVID is this ability to acceptance and actually encouragement of working remote for at least part of the time.
Well, Tim, as a conference board will influence all of Canada and business and government in terms of their thinking. So it's ironic in a sense that not only research it, you're living it. You've brought on board a lot of people. How do you get them the culture of the Conference Board of Canada when they're not in the same room remotely?
Oh, that is such an excellent question. So, you know, as I said, I came in 3 years ago, and we have spent a lot of time over those 3 years determining what kind of culture we want to have, and then creating the mechanisms to really move us towards that culture. So we spent an enormous amount of time my first year working on our values, which are hugely important to us. And again, if you're interested in values, they are available on our website to the public. We spent a lot of time on our purpose and so on. So we had a good basis to start from where we would talk to people about it. With our values, once we had determined them, by the way, with the help of the entire organization, everybody had an opportunity to be involved and to help determine. We put them in our performance review process. There are questions on our values in our recruiting process. So we infused them in the organization that way. So when we got to COVID, there was at least a sense amongst the majority of employees of who we were and what we wanted to be and what we aspired to be, and what was definitive and distinctive about the Conference Board. So we had the advantage of coming in with all that work done and with having locked arms around that. But there is no doubt that when you do not see people in the hallway every day, or you're not flying up once a month to meet with colleagues, it's different. So one of the things we've determined is we need to over-index on employee communications. So at 175 people, we are a small organization, and we have a comms department. It's a very good department, and they do all our work in terms of releasing research and pushing it out through social media and traditional media channels and so on. But we've made for us was a bold step, and we have hired a communications manager to do nothing but employee communications. And her job is going to be everything from, let's blow up our intranet, which, you know, I think we're all cheering about, to what are the other vehicles, you know, small ones, big ones, that we need to do to continue to reinforce people's touch points with each other. So that's a big thing. And I'll say just two more quick things on that. One of the things we fell into the first day, and we've kept it up, is what we call our morning huddle. So I recall, and I will recall this for the rest of my life, the week of the pandemic when it really blew up and the WHO made its announcement that it was global. And I can remember the Thursday was when it hit the papers, and my executive team, we made a decision that afternoon to shut for what we thought was 2 weeks. Who knew? And we sent everyone home and we were done. That was our effort to flatten the curve. What we said immediately is we were going to have the next day. It was either the Friday or the Monday, but one of those days we said we're going to have an all-staff meeting at 9:30. We had that all-staff meeting every single day until probably the end of June or July, and now we have it twice a week. It's a ritual, and we get, you know, the vast majority of the organization signs in for that. So that's like one vehicle that's been really successful and has helped people connect. That I know our new comms manager will expand on. The other thing that has been very important, and we've done this since I came on board, but it's been a really useful process in terms of, you know, reinforcing the culture, is we tend to set up a lot of task teams and working groups to figure out how we want to do things. So this summer, we set up six of them around COVID, and they were like, what information technology do we need? What are the policies for work from home? What is we do about culture and engagement? So employees have a chance to really influence their workspace and their work life. And we take as much of that and incorporate it into recommendations. And we do a lot of reporting back out. So those are some of the things we do. But there is no doubt in my mind that we need to, and we are, investing much more in employee communications and ways of getting people to work together than we ever have before. And we will continue to do that.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Going back to your work at Catalyst in a way, do you find that with working remotely that it helps women in their lives?
Well, there's a lot of research that's come out in the last few months saying that actually doesn't help women or racialized people in their lives, and they have been disproportionately disadvantaged or very much disadvantaged in this environment. I think what working remotely does for both men and women is it gives you more flexibility. And I know one of the factors that influenced us when we made the decision to become a remote work organization was we wanted to remove the stress from people as much as we could so they could really focus on the work. So removing stress meant don't have them worry if they're going to come back to a workplace where, you know, they might pick something up. Because I think even if you're, you know, retrofitting your ventilation and you put people on a schedule, people are worried. So we said, let's remove that. And the other big stressor we were concerned about was for folks who have children, you know, school-age children, we felt there was going to be a lot of anxiety with, you know, with schools being on and off. And if you don't know, and anybody who has kids knows this, if you don't know whether you're sending your child to school the next day or you haven't made a plan for that, that's very stress-inducing. So we felt for both men and women, it would be better to give them the flexibility so that, you know, you can still work, but you don't have to worry about finding that daycare for them if they stay home. That's not to say that it's been easy for people who have families and kids working out of, it's not. Like, I think I'm on a call every day or one or two where, you know, you hear, oh, I got a bandwidth issue. My two children are homeschooling and my wife is teaching and so on. So we have those challenges, but I do think it helps men and women in terms of finding more flexible and more accommodating work styles.
Susan, how is the conference board funded?
So we have multiple sources of funding. So a very large portion of our research is funded by donations from individual companies or from, you know, contribution agreements from the government. And so all that research, all that funding goes to research, figuring out research problems where we can put the solutions and the findings out there for the public. We do custom research. So we do have organizations that come to us and have a particular research question they want us to answer. We have a very large economics department. In fact, we're a forecasting powerhouse in this country. We work with all the governments. They rely on our data. So we'll get a lot of those economic questions. So we get paid for those. And a lot of that goes also out into the public domain. Our councils, we charge a membership fee for the council. It's a very reasonable fee for curating these meetings and providing these resources. So we have that. Back in the day, we used to do workshops and conferences. We do less of that now, obviously, in the COVID era. So, and the last thing is we do charge a subscription to our economic and HR data series because they don't have separate funded research. So that's how we pay for that. So lots of different sources of funding from both public sector, private sector, across different lines of business. So it's, as funding models go, it's a very robust one because it's diverse.
We're speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Up next, we'll talk about her work-life integration. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. Doing a bit of research on authentic leadership, in your mind, what is an authentic leader and how does it play out in your life?
So I think an authentic leader is someone who, you know, again, I will draw on an old adage. It's, you know, you say what you mean and you mean what you say. So I think you have to be as transparent and as candid as possible when you deliver your messages to people. And I think you have to do that in a style that resonates for people. So it's communicating what's going on transparently, and then it's keeping your promises and acting on them. And if you can't do that, you have to explain why. So when I came into the conference board, I came in with a mandate for change. I came in with a directive from our board of directors to take what was a wonderful organization with a rich history and an enormous pile of intellectual assets and make sure we were doing the most we could with those assets and that we were really using our work to, you know, to further the work of leaders in this country. What that did require, not surprisingly, is to rejuvenate and refresh the organization. There's a lot of organizational transformation. And with that comes some very difficult decisions about, you know, strategic decisions about where you're going to stay, where you're going to go. There are decisions around people, who stays, who goes, as you re-engineer the company. So we had, you know, for the first 18 months, you know, many difficult decisions that we had to communicate to all staff. And I had to stand up and say, you know, we've seen some of your colleagues go this week. Here's why. And here's what it means. We went through a period where we canceled conferences. We shut down some of our networks. We got out of knowledge areas that we had once been in. You have to be able to tell people as honestly as you can, or you can always be honest, but as constructively as you can, in a way they can hear it, what that means. I think in general that, you know, in the business world, I think we are often, I think we can often say more than we want to, than we do say. You know, I think employees are very resilient. I think employees are basically smart. And if you are fair and you're straight, you tell them. And if you can't tell them something, you say, I'm sorry, I can't tell you that for privacy reasons or because it's whatever. But if you do that over and over again, it's a flywheel effect. And I think you become known as authentic leader. People trust you. That's at the core of authenticity. That's why, you know, everybody should try and be authentic, in my view.
Susan, are you more of an introvert or an extrovert?
So I am an introvert bordering on an extrovert. So, you know, I have taken all those tests that you have taken over the years, Carl. So I am pretty clearly an introvert. And I, having read enough about this, you know, I know I fit the pattern where I need some time to re-energize. I need, you know, I find lots of small talk and large groups a challenge. Having said that, I'm enough of an extrovert, though, that I can always stretch. So I think you can't be a CEO and an introvert without that ability to know, okay, I'm going to a fundraiser, I'm going to a cocktail party, and you know what? I'm going to talk to every person in the room there. I'm going to shake hands. I'm going to make small talk. I'm going to do that. So I think you have to be able to do that. So I'm one of those people on the borderline.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. How do you recharge? What are some of the things you do to recharge?
So I'm a big reader. I find a lot of, I get a lot of comfort and a lot of energy from just taking the deep breath and curling up with a good book, be it a novel, be it a nonfiction. So I like to recharge. One of the things I've done since the beginning of the new year, actually, is I have forced onto my schedule a break in the middle of the day. I don't know about you, but I've been, as the COVID went on, certainly in the business sector, everybody's on Teams calls or Zoom calls all day long. And that time that used to be taken up with your commute, I found was just filling up. And I have a big capacity to work and I love to work. I'm very blessed, and most of my life I've always enjoyed my work. And for me, being CEO of the Conference Board of Canada is my dream job. I feel like I've been in training for it all this time. So I could just work and work and work. So I'm forcing that break time in the middle of the day. And maybe I do some reading for work. Maybe I do some other reading. So I do that. Again, outside of COVID, I am a big believer. I've never been a person that liked to go to the gym and exercise. I find it boring. So I have tried as much as I can, particularly in recent years, is to walk. I like to walk places. It's wonderful when you can live close enough to work that you can get a good hour walk in. So those are the kinds of things I do. They're probably very classic introvert things. You know, the last thing I would say is spending time with friends and family helps you energize. And the older I get, the more I appreciate that.
So what book are you reading right now?
Well, I knew you were going to ask me that as I said it. So right now, because I'm in the it's an intense time of year for us at the Conference Board, I am erring on the side of reading fiction. And many, many years ago, I read Ken Follett's book, Pillars of the Earth. And I loved it because as a former history major, anything that takes me back to another era in time and paints a vivid picture is very inspiring for me. And what I liked about the book was, you know, it tells you the story over the arc of the life of the monastery and the cathedral and the family. So I really enjoyed that. And of course, he published a prequel last fall. And so I read the prequel and I'm now reading the whole series through again. And I'm getting a lot of pleasure from being transported to another era, if you will. I would say on the nonfiction side, the last book I read that I really enjoyed was Dark Money by Jane Mayer, which is about special interest groups in the U.S. and what's going on there. And, you know, I always like to do some reading that helps inform my understanding, interpretation of the events around me and what's going on in the world.
We're speaking today with Susan Black, CEO of the Conference Board of Canada. What's your passion? When did you realize it, and has it evolved?
You know, I think you asked me a question earlier about my early career, and you know, one of the things I wanted to do early on that I flirted with when I was in college was going back and getting a PhD. Then, even though my only exposure to that was the professors who teach you, which, as you and I both know, it's kind of one side of the the program. And when I look back on why I did that and then why, you know, 15 years later, I actually went back and got it. I have my, you know, my passion is for really understanding the why of things. You know, why do people do what they do? Why do organizations make that decision? I think fundamentally, because if you understand the why, you understand how to make things better. You understand how to serve a bigger purpose and to do it so you have an impact. And so my, and when I look at sort of the different jobs I've had and what I've done, even when I was not in a formal leadership role, it was all about how do we improve this a little bit? How do we make this a little bit better for everybody, whether it was designing a new process or a new system or trying to bring in other resources? And so I think as I've gone through the years, my passion is on understanding the why and improving the world around us, in particular with helping other people do the best they can do and do what's the best work they can do, whether it's to be the best person. You know, I'll share one more thought on that. You asked about leadership earlier, and I do think as leaders, we bring an archetype to the workplace. And so, you know, sort of a fundamental occupation, not a leader. So I've worked with people who are, you know, commanded like they were a general. I've worked with people, you know, particularly in retail, who are literally merchants. Like you could have plopped them back into the corner grocery store. That's fundamentally what they wanted to do. You know, they wanted to figure out what to buy and they wanted to arrange it and sell it. You know, I've worked with people who are, you know, great orators and probably really preachers in their essence. And so when I look at what essence do I bring to my leadership role, I'm a teacher. I taught at York, I taught at Ryerson in different courses. I love teaching. And so I see as a leader, my passion is bringing that teaching persona to the workplace and helping everybody have as many learning moments and having an environment where we can continue to grow and get better. So that's my passion.
So when you're ready to leave the conference board, let me know, and I'm sure we'll make a position for you at McGill.
Thank you so much. Wonderful institution. I would welcome it.
Yale or Harvard, which is better?
Oh, that is such a loaded question. That's like saying, which of your children do you love better? And we both know you'd never answer that. So I'm going to say both phenomenal institutions and each had a big role in making me the leader I am today. I am forever grateful.
I can see a career in politics as well. This has been the CEO Series. Susan, thank you for joining us today. We also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.